good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for sharing this opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I'm sorry that the phone acting sort of one conversation I've broken up. Hopefully, I get through with you and we can get on to the phone. So, look, it's been an extraordinary time for the structure. It's been a key initiative across the globe, the developed and underdeveloped countries. In my career, I can honestly say that with everything that's happening with technology, it's a very exciting and interesting time to be an investor. At QIC, we've developed a series of research papers on issues like the global megatrends and implications for infrastructure investors. Late last year, we issued a paper on urbanisation, and Peter Carson has really talked about the paper to me today. We're trying to locate the copies of the paper, but we're hoping there'll be copies for those interested to take away to read. So, as we all know, there's a continuing trend of global movement of people from new and around the cities, and the population is growing at the same time. So, interesting developments coming from that specifically that I would like to cover today are the role that private capital can play, given significant private sector demand for infrastructure, which today we've got a whole lot of numbers here which we don't really know. We've coordinated. We're saying it's sort of globally there's about 2 billion of capital available. The opportunities and challenges of organisations to get the population that needs the infrastructure, especially in moving vehicles to new people, including those cities, a little bit. Thirdly, how a customer-focused approach can help to identify solutions to meet these challenges in the most productive manner. And I'd like to talk a little bit about cultural infrastructure, digital infrastructure, optimizing the use of existing infrastructure, and the climate change, in particular, for renewable energy. And I think earlier it was touched on around social license, and I think something that we all need to do as an industry is very much work on our social license. So really the focus for me is how do we make tradition livable and how do we have a customer focus and maintain the social license, particularly as private investors. And in all of this, innovation in the public and private sector working together will be important. One of my favourite people quotes Albert Einstein, and he said, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. And I think that's more the case now than ever. So, on to the presentation. the global infrastructure demand dynamics. Now, we've had a low interest rate environment for more than a decade, which started in late 2008. And the QIC view is that we remain in uncertain markets. Some of the key factors contributing to that is the Chinese economy is related to economic rate of growth in 28 years. And it's still very respectable, 6.4%, but that does create some uncertainty, particularly for Australia. In Australia, we also have house prices falling, which is impacting consumer sentiment, although we believe that this is partially offset by strong demographics. And as we referred to, the IMF downgraded global growth outlook recently. It's still quite respectable, down from 3.5 to 3.3, so it's still growing. And then we overlay on that a series of geopolitical risks in the world, particularly in the industry infrastructure. We have Brexit, the ongoing saga. Every week we get an update from our London colleagues, and it's continuing. I think the China-US tariff wars are obviously something that we're looking forward to, and populism, particularly as it impacts on policy training and investment of infrastructure assets. So that's the environment in which investors are looking at. Really, there is a significant pool of capital available for infrastructure investment because investors are looking for predictable cash flows, long-term inflation-linked revenues, and strong participation within their portfolios and to provide them strong level of returns. So when we're investing capital, we could think about in this environment how we actually achieve that investment objective. So global investors are very interested in investing in undersea infrastructure and are increasing their allocations. And we can certainly play a role in meeting the demand for new infrastructure in partnering to develop, own and operate infrastructure. I want to highlight the Australian superannuation market because I think we've been at the forefront in Australia in investing in infrastructure. It started back in the 1990s, and I think we simply to continue to play a leading global role. It's probably why we have the global structure hub in the country, really. In Australian funds have a good understanding of infrastructure, and they already have more developed portfolios. Total Australian superannuation assets are forecast to grow from £2.7 trillion currently to between £3.5 to £4.5 trillion. In 2025 and between £5 to £6.5 trillion by 2030, more than double the current level. So these funds, this capital is being invested globally. However, they continue to be attracted to Australia, which also the benefits of not having any currency risk. Across a backdrop where the investors into the numbers there are looking at the forward consensus in the market for forward returns in most asset classes would be over the years of the past. Infrastructure is an attractive place to allocate capital, and we're seeing a trend in overseas, and particularly in the US, Europe, etc., and Asia, of increasing allocations to infrastructure capital. So it's been quite strong. More competition too. But the Australian superannuation market is huge and a growing market that can be accessed. However, it's really important that investments are structured to meet the desirable characteristics that I went through earlier. So we do need to meet these investing objectives for time for the future. But the future is not as it used to be in investing in infrastructure. It's a very different world now that we're looking forward into, and there's a number of mega trends that are shaping the outlook for infrastructure. Firstly, decentralization. So, and I think a number of people have spoken about technology and the decentralization and the central service provision is becoming increasingly decentralized. The ability, energy generation, and healthcare are just a few examples of services that are increasingly being provided by networks of decentralized assets to improve efficiency, flexibility, and resilience. Digital and customer transformation. We have increased digitalization, putting more power in the hands of the customer, and all service providers are striving to be more responsive to their needs, which is a big trend. Regulatory evolution. Global regulation is evolving, increasing pressure on investors in some jurisdictions for this very increasing. For example, in Australia, the AAR recently reduced the allowed rates of return for electricity networks. In Europe, the cost of capital decisions across multiple sectors have now decreased by 70 basis points. In the most recent regulatory determinations made over there. So we recognise that regulators have a higher job, and they need to recognise that markets are transforming, that these industries are changing, and they need to, but they also need to continue to provide regulation that incentivises investment and recognises that there are new risks. And at the same time, affordability is a key issue, particularly with the social license and customer-focused environment. We need to consider that. The government has a role to play in the transition, especially in the area of energy policy and renewables. topics of extension, particularly driven by such factors as climate change and urbanisation. The United Nations estimates that another 2.5 billion people will be added to urban areas by 2050, with close to 9% of this increase taking place in Asia and Africa. Africa is really rapidly growing in jurisdiction. And developed nations are currently the most urbanized and are continuing to experience increased urbanization. So this trend will be the intensification is increasing. The last one, aging, and I would also say shifting demographics. In Australia, the proportion of the population aged about 65 years is expected to increase to 20% within the next 20 years, from 15% currently, and to 25% in the next 50 years. And this has quite significant implications for government budgets and levels of demand for healthcare in particular. However, according to the UN, there are 2 billion children in the world today aged between 0 and 14. And there will still be 2 billion people, 2 billion children in that age bracket by 2100. So, 51 countries will witness a decline in their population by 2050. An aggregate share of the world population could reach 40% by 2100. So there's actually quite a different shift going on as we go on in that composition, which is quite relevant to think about. So definitely all this points to the fact that more infrastructure is required for the future, but it's a different type of infrastructure to what we've seen in the past. Because of the high uncertainty about the future, we would choose to invest here. We can actually be involved in driving value and the long term thematics of the sector are really supported. So, talking about Australia and what is the current plan. So, urbanisation is another question. The bottom line is quite a frightening one around the level of construction activity and projects and just the delivery of homes is an interesting one to think about. But urbanisation and strong population growth in major cities around the world, and especially in Australia, cities such as Sydney and Melbourne, will require significant new infrastructure. Further, we are operating the need to bring to requirements and transforming particularly existing infrastructure to make it as productive as possible. So in energy, we have renewable generation and storage infrastructure, changing the energy system, and health, aging demographics, supporting the health system to become more efficient, resulting in a more decentralized system and greater adoption of digital technologies. A new hospital, 40% of the cost is actually digital infrastructure now within the new hospital. In transport, the ability of the service, as well as new vehicle technologies, electric autonomous vehicles are transforming how we travel together with the luxury. So we need to embrace these technologies and we need to invest in continuing to the traditional ways and rail to meet the value of customer needs. But all these new technologies need to be thought about as we plan our transport infrastructure. And whilst the average road performance across Australia is declining, the average speed and reliability is declining due to worsening congestion. And this has a particularly acute impact on regions with high expected growth, affecting the quality of life. So, for example, government to do something about this sort of something we need to be very aware of and this is a forward planning required. So, Western Sydney is forecast to have 1 million new residents by 2031, and there's also forecast to be an increase in the deficit. So, what that means is that basically people will have to travel more for work or longer. So, that will mean increasing congestion and will be an ongoing challenge and an impediment to growth in the future. And existing infrastructure basically will be placed in an increasing level of stress. Initially, there are plans in place to respond to significant population growth, mission, changing sort of the city's approach, having the potential for the development of this continuing to accommodate the next phase of growth in the region. However, and this is plans which are going to require the capital, which will come to numbers that we're bringing through. So whilst the pipeline is growing, it should be in Australia, it's not more than currently heavily focused on transport. There's also significant future investment required in other areas such as healthcare, telecommunications, particularly due to the megatrends that I mentioned earlier. And governments are investing significant amounts in these areas, but part of the solution has to be in leveraging private sector expertise and delivering economy of them and transforming the infrastructure we have to meet to deal with the emerging demands and customer preferences. At the Commonwealth, state, and local level, many governments are capital constrained. And the involvement of the private sector has the potential to provide more than capital. I think we bring more than capital to the table, particularly given the expertise that is existing infrastructure investment world now with people owning and developing economies that are still very long periods of time. So this is about operational efficiency to achieve growth and assisting that to make infrastructure even more productive, especially when new technology is required. And in areas such as renewables or data, we're very, very cognizant of ESG. That is the number one issue for us. And so an approach that delivers a solution for all stakeholders, but especially the customer and the community, is something that we have to keep top of mind. And we also have the ability to develop in partnership different platforms and business models. And we really require going forward with a lot of these industries are changing. So taking a step back, we've got lots of capital and we've got lots of infrastructure we need to rebuild. But what are we trying to achieve? And what does it mean to succeed in managing urbanisation and population growth? And we argue, and this goes very much to the social license aspect, we argue that the ultimate metric for success is the quality of life in our cities. So how do infrastructure investors contribute to achieving this goal? We can focus on our customers and how we provide them with better services. This is not only improves the quality of life, but it also ensures the investment returns on our assets are sustainable over the long term, as they will continue to meet the needs of the customer. Avoiding this expanded assets might arguably ensure the most productive use of the field capital. So, we really do have to have a customer focus in everything we do. We're creating projects that deliver on the quality of life. The customer of the framework is something that very strongly we believe is key to getting the most productivity. So to achieve this, we need good infrastructure planning that is value for money and the best solution for the customer needs, rather than politically motivated infrastructure. The building blocks for customer participation infrastructure gives us key emerging status things. Some of the most important are managing lifecycle risks through better national planning, and we need coordination between sectors, and coordination is required to adapt old infrastructure to the changing customer demands and technology, and that's how important to get all that integrated. Regulation, there's an ongoing need to educate regulators regarding the risk that regulation can be constrained and efficient and improve service delivery for customers. Improve customer service, so we need to measure service delivery and accountability. And we need to link financial performance to service achievements and take a proactive approach to embracing new technologies. And finally, connectivity. Ensuring we leverage the data that we have to broaden this and ensure accountability and the outcomes we deliver to customers. And this is a growing area of importance across the board. The adoption of a customer-led framework will drive more active management infrastructure, which we believe can drive better value for money and deliver quality services. It presents an alignment model in our community which will have resonance with government and regulators, and we believe will deliver long-term value to investors. We need to utilise our existing infrastructure to smoothly avoid foreign assets, and I think technology is the key for managing. We need to leverage new technologies such as 5G and Internet of Things, which enable more advanced asset management techniques which can lead to productivity improvements. This is a particular interest of mine, our cultural infrastructure. And we're talking about how to make our cities more livable. So cultural infrastructure is a key determinant of quality of life in highly urbanized environments. Cultural infrastructure is also increasingly being procured under a PPP model in certain parts of the world, and we expect this to increase in the future and living life in Australia and other places. For example, Oslo has rebranded itself as a cultural capital of Scandinavia, gaining global recognition for its high quality contemporary cultural facilities, and its current major investment program is supported by PPP. They've got new waterfront spaces for businesses, arts and arts museums and public spaces once they have a new plan. And there's a broad range of benefits from cultural infrastructure to drive innovation, resulting in a smart and more competitive economy. New South Wales has managed to productivity improvements from cultural infrastructure contributed 16.3 billion in gross state product in 2017. It enables growing creative industries, which employ 212,000 people in New South Wales and are growing at an average rate of 2.1% per year. And it attracts tourism, which supports our economic growth and economy. With New South Wales attracting 12.6 million cultural and heritage visitors in 2017, resulting in tourism expenditure of 13 billion. So airports are a key part of our cultural infrastructure, and a strong demand for air travel must be satisfied in an efficient and safe way to meet customer expectations. And in specific infrastructure that we're developing, the level of quality of that is actually important. So that's why, as an example, Brisbane Airport is currently there at the start of the domestic terminal car park is actually in our work. It creates a sort of place, we can also further artworks throughout the international terminal and across the airport precinct to create very vibrant for people using the airport. We're working towards the development of thriving metropolis, and that's a trend across airport, using quality urban development to attract businesses, which will utilize improved transport in the area. And Brisbane Airport continues to improve efficiency and facilities through technology. And that's a necessary response across all airports to the dramatic growth in global aviation market, which we continue to improve. So cultural infrastructure is an important and equal priority as we build the bigger cities. As outlined earlier, and I think we've heard a bit about it today, one of our prime investment themes is digitization. With the explosion in data demand, both in cloud computing and the role of 5G, we see significant investment opportunities emerging in telecommunication infrastructure, including fiber optic networks, subsea cables, wireless networks, telecommunications, and data centers. In particular, underlying trends in demand and technology are increasingly requiring modern infrastructure capable of delivering high-capacity, secure, and scalable telecommunication services. The particularly for independent platforms and classroom regions such as APAC. Underlying demand growth in data computing and digitalization, which is forecasted at around 3.6% at this point, and it's expected to continue as consumers, enterprises, and governments become increasingly reliant on smarter devices, digital connectivity, and sensitive cloud services. So, this is an area of significant investment growth that will require innovation in the business models used and a good understanding of the opportunities and the needs and risks in this area. Climate change and climate risk is a big area. And I think it's getting a lot of attention now with the climate election, which is good to see. But as we had the government said recently, the impact of and required transition for climate change is significant. It's a permanent shift, and we must recognise the business challenges and opportunities. So we are now in the transition to a low carbon economy globally. Investment in renewable energy, infrastructure will be an important part of the solution, but it requires stable regulation and energy policy. It requires stable regulation and energy policy. So I think people will see we get some change there. Overall, electricity generation in Australia has been slowed basically, about 1% in 2018. But we had a 25% increase from renewable sources. A lot of new large-scale solar, a 23% increase in wind generation, and new small-scale solar generation. So investment in large-scale clean energy projects was over $20 billion in 2019. A trend that we've seen in lots of other jurisdictions around the world. And there were 87 large-scale projects that are under construction of financial commitments of clean energy for 2019. So, ARENA estimates that the renewable energy generation accounted for 1/3 of total installed capacity in 2019. Up to last year, we've invested in this sector on behalf of our clients. We've committed to the Carolyn Sutton Renewable Fund. It's an innovative structure designed to unlock investment in large scale renewable energy. And we're looking to invest in multi-billion dollar fund and planning to develop around approximately 1,000 megawatts in large-scale renewable generation projects. So, providing with a portfolio of diversified renewable assets. We've established in 2016 and we've now invested 155 megawatts of solar and 650 megawatts of wind, which the significant private sector capital that is available to be private investment into a low carbon economy through investment in a lot of areas, in particular renewable energy. And we need to drive more clean energy and more population growth and implementation continues. The simple review of the energy that we stand estimated that the current investment risk premium for energy policy on climate is 3%. So the policy and regulatory uncertainty needs to be addressed in energy so that we can continue to invest. And that's a really important issue I think for us as investors. So in conclusion, there is significant and growing pool of capital looking to invest in global infrastructure, regarding Australian investors at the forefront. There are many bigger trends, including strong population growth and increasing urbanisation, which will require significant investment in infrastructure. A customer-focused approach to infrastructure is key to developing productive projects that improve the quality of life. Key opportunities to improve the quality of life and impact environment include active asset management being utilised to improve the productivity of existing infrastructure, particularly by leveraging evolving technologies such as 5G and the Internet of Things. We need to get the best that we can from what we have today. Cultural infrastructure will promote and support all times as the transition continues. So thank you for your attention, and that's all we've been able to develop in this country and in the country.